Welcome to Her Leading Story, a podcast that will inspire you with stories from amazing female leaders and give you some ideas to help you design a life and a career that's perfect for you. It's totally doable, and the good news is that you'll have me and our community of leading women by your side every single step of the way. Let's get started. I'm your host, Julie Artis, and this is Her Leading Story. Welcome to this week's episode of Her Leading Story. I am thrilled you're joining me this week, and we're doing something a little bit different. We are replaying an episode in which my colleague, Vicki Abelson, who's also a leadership and career coach, interviewed me for her podcast called The Back Pocket Coach. Vicki interviewed me in December of 2023, and we have a wide-ranging conversation that we're going to replay for you here. We talk about working with clients, what it means to be a leader, and how being a leader doesn't necessarily mean managing people, but it can mean different things in different roles. We talk a little bit about change and change management and how everybody assumes that change is going to be bad, but that it's not necessarily bad, that change can actually lead to opportunity. We talk a little bit about entrepreneurship versus 9-to-5 jobs. We've both had both, and I go on a long rant around bureaucracy and how bureaucracy exists in large organizations and is a big part of the kinds of work that I've been doing over the last couple of years in my full-time job. And then what I like most about this interview is that Vicki, at the end, asks me what I'm most proud of, what I was most proud of for 2023. And I talk about both a personal thing and a business thing. And I think you'll be interested in hearing this interview with me, which is a little bit more of a behind the scenes, getting to know me a little bit better, as opposed to me interviewing or talking to somebody else. So with that said, enjoy the episode, and we'll see you next week.
Hello, Julie. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Back Pocket Coach. I'm so excited to have you here today and so excited to chat with you this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So tell the people, who are you? What do you do? Who is Julie?
My name is Julie Artis. I am a career coach and leadership coach for women. I am also a professor at DePaul University and an associate dean there, and have been coaching faculty on and off for about 10 years and recently started my own business coaching women around career things. I work with women to ditch the burnout, get the money they're worth, change jobs, go for promotions, sort of helping women through transitions, especially at mid-career, you know, when the stakes are really high, much higher than when you're just out of college and you're looking for that first or second job, right? And I love it. And I love the people I work with. And what I love about it is that they're so amazing, and they, a lot of them don't see it.
Yes,
the way that I see it. And so I just, it's like so fantastic to watch them like change and grow and sort of live into their potential in a way that they maybe hadn't before. And it's just such my jam. And that's what I love doing.
I love that. And I see that all the time too. Like where I see like how amazing you are. Like, why don't you see that? How can I help you see like that light in you too? That's just, it's just the best. And like, so motivating.
It's the best. Yeah. I know.
Okay. So I have a lot of questions for you, but the first one that immediately pops up, and this is a question that I get a lot too. So you introduced yourself as a career and leadership coach. And I'm curious, kind of, how do you define those two things, and what is important about those two things?
So for me, they kind of go hand in hand when you're talking about somebody who's 10 or 20 years into their career, right? I mean, it sort of depends on the industry, but I think about a career as kind of the trajectory or series of different positions that someone has over their lifetime. Mm-hmm. And those could be at the same place, like me, right? Yeah. But having had many, many, many different positions within the same organization and sort of the trajectory of that, or it could be changing jobs a lot and moving around from place to place, and just how that career sort of grows. And then at some point, people get to that transition from being, you know, what in some industries is called an individual contributor to being a manager, and have to step into a managerial role and lead people. And it was for me like one of the biggest transitions of my entire career. And it went okay, but in some, it went well in some ways, and in other ways it was a complete disaster.
Yeah.
And so I learned so much. I learned so much about myself. So I think the sort of different lenses for leader versus career, our career is kind of the whole trajectory, and leadership is a specific kind of role within that.
Hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that distinction. So career is kind of your whole, from start to finish, kind of where you're going, where leadership is the thing that you're working on in that moment to kind of help you elevate from individual contributor to a more, mm-hmm. perhaps, people-focused role.
Yeah. That's the way I see it. Although, I mean, in my own work, I also think about ways that women in particular lead in non-career corporate yes. settings, right? So, for instance, people who are teachers, mm-hmm. you know, are leaders, right? Like, they may not be, I mean, they're managing a classroom.
Yes.
But, you know, it's not like they have direct reports in the way that we think about it. People who are really involved in activism, right? And so, like, I also like to think about leadership, not just within the trajectory of the career, but more broadly, like, what does it mean to be a leader in different aspects of your life?
Yeah.
What does it mean to really follow your own interests, path, passions, knowing? And I think, you know, there's ways that people can be leaders that have nothing to do with their careers.
100%. And it's funny that you said that about teachers. I was actually a mystery reader in my kindergartner's class this morning. And like, yes, the teacher, support teacher, does have to manage the classroom, but also thinking about how does she have to manage parents and parent expectations and parent involvement and I'm sure administration and her co-teachers and all of that. It is a lot. It is a lot to juggle. And when people come to me all the time and say, like, well, Vicky, I'm not the leader. I don't have direct reports, or I'm not a leader. I'm just a so-and-so. I'm just a teacher, whatever it is. Like, no, friend, like, we are all leading. Even if you're just leading yourself, like, we are all leading.
Right.
What are the skills that you need in order to do it well?
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious, what are some of sort of the trends that you have seen specifically with like women and careers and leadership over the course of the last year?
You know, I've talked to a lot of women who have been in some way, shape, or form, directly or indirectly affected by the shakeups in tech early in the year, and the sort of ripple effects that had, not just on that industry, but on related industries, and also which has been hard. It's made things really uncertain for people. I talked to somebody who was in a related industry and knew that they needed to figure out a different job because the opportunities were drying up for their particular organization because of the changes that had happened in Silicon Valley. And then I think with the economy, and the inflation that we've seen, there's just a lot of uncertainty about making moves. Am I going to find something else? Should I step into this leadership position? What does it mean for my family? I mean, those are the kinds of conversations that I have been having with people looking for coaching, with my friends, with, you know, just this sort of feeling of things are unstable, and that makes it even more difficult to coach people, because if you're feeling like externally things are unstable, it's hard to like not absorb some of that. Yeah. And then it makes it really challenging to discern what's internal to you and what's external. Those are the things that I've seen if we're talking about sort of big picture trends and how I see them affecting. Mm-hmm. I had one client who, I mean, she ended up getting promoted, which was great. But the one of the things that happened was there was a merger. So like all of these macro level things that happened well out of our control do affect the day-to-day work that we're doing, right? And so this also dovetails with me being a sociology professor. So I'm always thinking about like macro level trends, both in the economy and society, and how it's affecting individuals, and trying to pull that apart for clients as well, so that they're trying to really like really situating, like, of course you're affected by this, but also understand that, like, try to separate it so that you're sort of moving and acting from your core, not from this external sort of thing that you're absorbing.
Yeah. There's so much there that you said that I think is so important. The one thing that I'm really, two things. One that you said is, I think a lot of times people assume that like these disruptions and all the changes that we're going through as a society, or as organizations, departments, even personally, that they're negative, right? We always assume that change and change management is a bad thing. But sometimes like positive things happen. And like, what would happen if we opened up our minds to the idea that something good might happen for your client? There was a promotion. Like, oftentimes we assume there's a merger and like, is my job going to get cut? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's not going to get cut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was an interesting one, because it was like she was working toward a promotion before the merger was even on the table, and people had agreed to it, and it created this sort of role for her. And then when the merger happened, it kind of shifted to the conversation about her role, such that it actually, she got then another promotion. So it was like double.
Yeah.
It was quite something to like go through with someone where like, whoa.
We flash them the best thing possible.
No, but I know what you mean about change often being seen as something that's bad. I do think it's something that many people experience as difficult.
Yeah.
As a manager myself, or somebody with some leadership responsibilities in my own organization, I was just this week talking about a change that might be coming down the pike. That's not a big change, but I was like, oh, this could be a big opportunity. Like, some people might be upset by it. Some people might be happy about this particular change, but I could see a way that this could shake things up in a way that would be positive overall in the long run, right? Like, it doesn't mean that there's like not immediate freak out. But like the fact that there could be something good that comes out of this change is often something people don't want to think about, right?
Don't want to think about. Yeah. Our natural reaction is like to protect ourselves, right? It's like to look for the bad so that we can be ready when the shoe drops, so to speak.
Right. I think it's like our brain's protective mechanism. We naturally go to like, oh,
where's
no,
what the is lion? This
mean? Yeah. Right. Exactly. A cortisol. Adrenaline. Yeah. Yeah.
We're under attack from the lions. You were talking about the things that we can control versus the things we can't control, and sort of they're having the sense of confusion around that. How do you help your clients, and I'm sure yourself too, sort of like make that distinction between what can I control and what is outside of my control?
I was just talking to somebody about this morning. Somebody who's going to be a new manager, and just sort of prepping a little bit for taking on that position for the first time. And one of the things we talked about was having like expectations for people that we work with, for ourselves. And one of the things that I was coaching her on was this idea that you can have expectations, understand that your expectations are not universally held by everybody that you work with, which was a huge surprise for me when I became a leader and was a little bit of a trap because I assumed that my understanding of what the roles like were around me and what my role was were different than what everybody else, everybody else had their own sort of point of view. And it was kind of exacerbated. It's even worse because I was chair of a department of faculty, right? So like we do have a lot more autonomy maybe than most.
Yeah.
So that's why it was really a trap. But I learned a lot from that. And what I learned was my assumptions about other people and the way that they're thinking about things may not be like, I cannot lay my assumptions on other people. Well, they have different points of view, experience,
yeah,
everything. Yeah. And if I try to like have a conversation with somebody because they're not meeting one of my expectations, A, I have to be sure that I've communicated that expectation, and B,
100%.
As much as I can help them, coach them, like try to appeal to like our common goal, blah, 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 blah. At the end of the day, my role as the leader is to communicate the expectation and then have the conversation, offer to coach, blah, 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 you know, or help or support or get resources for them. But I cannot control what they do.
100%.
And that line is so hard for people. I mean, I think it's harder in like, you know, marriage or like with your kids. You know, I think that's where like the rubber meets the road, where you're just like, oh, I really cannot, especially I have teenagers. So it's like, I really can't, like, I cannot literally pick them up and put them in the car seat anymore, right? Like, but I think it also, we trick ourselves that at work, that it's different, but it's not, right? So yeah, I have strong feelings about this, as you might.
No, I completely understand. I do too. You know, it's the one thing that pops up for me, as you were saying, something I've been thinking a lot about is the importance of motivation. And I think we think like we're adults and like we don't need motivation, or we think about motivation only as it relates to like physical fitness or things like things like that. Like, am I motivated to like go run a mile today, whatever it is? But motivation is so important in work. And I can't help but think about that, like the what's missing in that, like I set the expectation, I can follow up, but like they have to be motivated
for
their own reasons to do the thing, like to make sure that they are meeting your expectation or communicating with you for whatever reason they can't meet that expectation. Like that motivation piece is just so important.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And it's so funny because I was also talking about people's motivations. I think I've been influenced a little bit by, the Enneagram language around this. Are you familiar?
A little bit, yeah.
Where people's motivations, like they're kind of grouped. There's 9 Enneagram types, but they're in threes, right? Yeah. And so they're people's core motivations. Like one of them is to feel safe, right? One of them is to have freedom and autonomy. And then I always forget the other one. Oh, to be seen as significant, to have significance.
Yeah.
And so like at a core, like not motivation, like, you know, but like what makes people do anything that they do, right? And like, you know, sometimes we think about it more as an external thing, but I think about when you were talking about motivation in that case, I was thinking like, what is it that motivates? What's the what's underneath the like top level, right? Yeah. What's inside people, like sort of psychology or past experience that leads them to want to be the person that like goes, or always follows the rules, or always rebels against the rules, or, you know, like all of that. And I think as a leader, kind of being curious about people is so critical, because I think you can learn a lot about people's motivation and what motivates them if you are observant. And I don't mean motivate them like money, right? Or rewards in that way, but like what intrinsically seems to motivate them? Is it recognition? Is it reassurance? Is it a flexible, you know, like having, being able to go in and out of the office. Like those are just things off the top of my head from those three pieces of the Enneagram that I was talking about earlier, I could imagine using as a leader in order to like sort of think about how my people are motivated.
Yeah. 100%. You know, it's funny because as you start talking about the Enneagram, I use the DISC assessment a lot with my client. I had a client who she was very frustrated with one of her employees. She's like, but she was also very, she's a very like high performing, great employee. And she's like, I really want her to know how much I appreciate her. And I tell her all the time how much I appreciate her. And I feel like it's like coming on deaf ears, like she doesn't hear me and I'm afraid that she's going to leave. And I asked her, I was like, have you asked her how she wants to be shown appreciation? And it turns out that this, her employee was a C on the DISC, and the C is all about kind of details. They just want to be like heads down, spreadsheets. Like they don't need like the touchy feely relationship
stuff.
They just want to be sort of left alone to do the work. And that's how she wanted to be shown appreciation, by being given like more complex projects and being left alone to do those projects. She didn't need the thank you notes. She didn't need like the Starbucks
gift card,
whatever it is. And like we sometimes assume like people want to be shown recognition and they are motivated by the same things we are motivated by.
We are. Yeah.
And that's like human nature, right? We just like, oh, I want a Starbucks gift card. So I'm going to give one to my employees also. Right. And like, that's just not the case. And so if we take the time to ask the question, how do you want to be motivated? How do you want to be recognized? Or looking at, to your point, through a lens of the Enneagram or DISC or Myers-Briggs, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Like, pick one. we don't care.
Exactly.
Pick one. And ask the questions and like really be intentional about that. It's going to solve, like, get rid of so many headaches.
So many headaches. And I'm thinking too about just how much like emotional and relational effort is required to do that.
Yes.
But that people who do that well, I think I'm not going to say an advantage, but I'm going to say that they have teams that probably really, really like working with them.
100%. It's funny, right before our call, I actually just finished an engagement with a client of mine. And when we first started together, she was starting a new job and with a brand new boss, new company, whatever. And I kind of gave her a list of questions to ask her new boss. So like, how does her boss want to be communicated with, all of the things. And my client asked me, she's like, wait, I can ask her those questions? Like, she's not going to think that's weird. I'm like, she might think that's weird. I don't know. I don't know her. She might think that's weird. But you can absolutely ask those questions. And like, think about like what a leg up it's going to give you, because you know exactly, does she want to get an email or would she rather get a text? Like, does she want the whole paragraph or does she just want the bullet points? Like, I do think it gives you a huge leg up, whether it's with your boss or your direct reports or whoever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I mean, I was just talking to this person going into this managerial role about asking lots of questions.
Yeah.
And she was kind of like, but what, I'm going to ask too many questions, you know, like, and I was like, well, I mean, you can also frame it like, I just want to do a really good job. I have a question about X. Like, I'm like, just be curious and confident. And I mean, like, it's all about like learning and absorbing from people, you know, when you're first in a different, whether it's a leadership role or a different setting altogether.
Yeah, exactly.
I've also seen, it's interesting that you say about like the giving your client a list to ask the boss. I've also seen examples of, not many, it's more like probably people in the entrepreneurship world, but like somebody I know who does work in corporate has like a, here's how to work with me.
Yeah.
Like, here's what I am on the Enneagram. Here's what I am in Myers-Briggs. This is what this means for me. If you need something in front of me, here's this. Here's how I run meetings. It's like a one pager document, almost like we would produce, like what I give my clients, right? When they start working with me, here's how to get in touch with me. Here's all, you know, like that, but like really, really detailed. And I just wonder, again, how much clearer and better we would all do in the workplace if we actually had people aware enough to articulate like all of those things and just lay them out on the table at the beginning.
Yes. Oh my gosh. 100%. And also too, I think that's a great idea. Like whoever is doing that, I think that's a great idea. And also if we could like suspend judgment of like, just because that person likes an email and not a conversation, that doesn't make them bad, right? Like the other people's communication preferences or feedback preferences or whatever, just because they're different from us doesn't mean that they're wrong.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. Oh yeah. That would be nice too. Suspending judgment.
Suspending, yeah. I mean, you and I could, we could work ourselves out of a job if we could convince people.
It's so true.
We absolutely work ourselves out of a job. Okay. So I'm curious because you do have your feet in kind of both worlds right now, right? The entrepreneurial world, the working world. And I know you're in academia and perhaps it's a little bit different, but what if any similarities do you see between sort of the entrepreneurial world and the like, quote unquote, like standard 9-to-5 world?
I mean, it's all people, right? So there's that. I think for me, my experience with entrepreneurship and even, you know, coaches that are more advanced or have much bigger operations than me, you know, I've only been doing this like a little less than 2 years, that it's in academia and in corporate, the bureaucracy piece, I just, especially in academia, slows things down a ton. Yeah. Right. But just like compliance things, you know, forms to fill out.
All the forms.
You know, I mean, there's all of the, and even in my job as an associate dean, like there's some things I can approve online and some things I have to put a signature on and send to a certain email address. And like, it's just like there's so much bureaucracy. And I think for like the entrepreneurial world, it just moves so fast and people are running really lean organizations for the most part, that kind of bureaucracy, while there may be like at scale, like some people have a big team and they have people doing different things and they haven't, you know, they do have some of that apparatus. Like I don't, but some people do. There may be some of that, but I cannot imagine that it is something like what I see on a day-to-day basis come through my email.
Yeah.
You know, like the, I have to do these like learning things for compliance.
Yeah. Oh
like
my gosh. Tests.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I remember having to do those. Yes.
But I think on the flip side of that, I'm trying to think. Like there's still a lot of, so I think it's almost more the scale of the organization is a big differentiator when you're talking about entrepreneurship and, you know, 9-to-5s of any sort or academia. Because the bigger you get, the more bureaucracy you have to put in place.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've also seen it done well. I work with an organization that was founded, and it's a faculty development organization called the National Center for Faculty Development and Diversity. It's how I started coaching.
Oh.
Yeah. I did their program 10 or 12 years ago, and it was founded by a faculty member who struggled to get tenure, got tenure, she didn't struggle to get tenure, but it was soul crushing.
Yeah. Oh.
So she built this program to help other people. And then, I mean, long story short, she ended up growing it into this big business that now is like the, I think, nationwide number one deliverer of like mentoring kind of content and everything for a lot of universities across the country. And I still do some work with them. And what's been amazing for me to watch is when I first participated, it was tiny. There was like a founder, like an assistant, and maybe one other person, like a tech person. And that was kind of it. And it is now grown to the point. So there were like 40 people who participated when I did it. You know, it was like a group coaching kind of program. with curriculum and stuff. And it's essentially the same program, but now every semester, we usually have about 700 people go through it. And that there's other programs.
Wow.
And I have seen it grow. Like now the founder has stepped aside as the leader and there's a CEO and a COO and they've grown the core team so that now there's people doing marketing and that. But so it's still considered a small business because it's, you know, still only 20 something people who are the full time sort of employees.
Yeah.
But the way that they've been mindful about it, the way they were mindful and sort of like thoughtful about handling things during the pandemic in terms of the way that they're doing things, it has just been fascinating to sort of have a front seat view into how it has evolved and changed, how some things stay the same, how they experiment with things, how they navigate change. And like seeing the introduction of more bureaucracy there, like when I first started coaching with them, like I would get a check written, like with a handwritten thing. And now it's like a direct deposit. You know what I mean? Like
all the things. Yeah.
All of those things. Like, and so, I don't know. That's the closest, like I've been to seeing something grow and scale. Yeah.
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 Oh, that's really cool. That's really interesting. Yeah. I want to ask you just a question because we always think about, as leaders, as people, as women, like all the things we haven't done and all the things we have yet to do. But I want to know, what are you most proud of in the last year?
Oh, wow. In the last year?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I am most proud of in the last year, I have a personal one and a business one.
Yeah, I love that.
So my personal one is that I had been feeling really exhausted and not myself. And I kind of talked to a bunch of different people, tried a bunch of different things. And then it turns out I have sleep apnea.
Oh.
And so I think my thing I'm most proud of is that I just kept going to try to find some sort of answer because so often I think we just push through and ignore things that are ephemeral. Like I don't feel quite right. Like I'm able to work, but I'm really tired and I want to nap all the time. Is this just post-pandemic stuff?
Yeah,
is
it, you know, coffee.
So like at first I was just excusing it on that ground. And then the worse it got, the more I was like, no. And then, you know, one doctor reminded me that I was a little bit anemic. And I was like, yeah, but a couple people, you know, anyway, I did a sleep test and now I'm getting treatment and it's like, I won't say it's night and day because I'm still getting used to the, I have a CPAP machine, but like the focus and the ability to kind of operate in the world is like night and day. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then prioritizing yourself is so hard. Like you have two jobs, you have teenagers, right. Like that's a lot. Like to take, like, that is a huge accomplishment to prioritize yourself, to like advocate for yourself. I'm so glad you did that.
Yeah, no, that was the number one best thing that I did for myself all year, for sure.
Yeah.
In terms of my business, I had some initial success last year in getting one-on-one clients and everything. And then I went through, and I think this is because of the uncertainty in the economy and I was relatively new to coaching, at least coaching outside of faculty, right? Coaching. And I had a ton of calls with potential clients and just like they weren't landing.
Yeah.
Right. And so just staying in the game or like, what is going on with this? Okay, maybe it's a skill of mine. Maybe it's the way I'm putting myself out there. I mean, I'm sure in retrospect, and the reason I say these two things is because I was so exhausted.
Mm.
I don't know if it would have been good for me at that point to even take on what, while I was still figuring out this health stuff over there.
Yeah.
And so to the extent that we have some woo listeners out there, like this is the universe, like, right? The universe is not delivering me clients at a moment when I'm incredibly exhausted.
You weren't able to support them. Yeah.
And I would not have been able to support them to the point that I would have wanted to be able to, right? And so I think the pivot with the health, like the sleep study, and then
really doubling down on putting myself out there once I started feeling better and being like, you and I are on LinkedIn together, putting myself out there. Well, first I went on Instagram because I have some visibility issues and Instagram seems safer. And then for whatever reason, I don't know why. And so then just like, but I started at like the end of August, like posting 5 days a week on Instagram and just really putting out regular content, and then started posting some of that and being more regular more recently, just within the last month or two on LinkedIn. And I now have clients. I'm like, it's like starting to grow, right? But I think these two things are related, right? It's like I couldn't really show up and be visible because I was exhausted. I probably wouldn't have been able to support clients as much as I would have liked.
Yeah.
And now I feel I'm just proud of myself for not giving up. You know, so many people would have just been like, oh, I can just stay, you know, like I have my job, I can just whatever. But I really stuck with it, both things. And that to me is the biggest win of all.
Thank you. I feel like I could ask you 1,000 other questions about that, but thank you so much for sharing both of those, because I think those are so important, and like the connection between our well-being and how we're doing professionally, and also the vulnerability of sharing, like sometimes things don't go well, like in entrepreneurism and just like in our regular 9-to-5.
Absolutely.
Sometimes things don't go well. We try hard and like it, and that's exactly okay, but that doesn't mean that we have to give up. That doesn't mean that we're doing something wrong. That means that we have to keep trying different things, new things, experimenting, keep moving forward, and then things turn around.
Yeah. It's this former like perfectionist is not like,
you know. Yes.
Yeah. Like this super achiever is sometimes not so comfortable with that. But I think that's one thing that I've really, really learned through both my different jobs I've had at work and also this sort of entrepreneurial experience, is that like you kind of have to go through periods like that and learn how to like move through them with grace.
Yes.
Because they're going to happen.
They're going to happen. They're absolutely going to happen. Julie, tell the people, where can they find you? How can they learn more about you? Tell them all things.
Okay. You can find me on my website, julieartiscoaching.com. That explains mainly, it has a little bit about me and a little bit about my coaching program. I'm also on Instagram at Dr. Julie Artis and on LinkedIn at Julie Artis Coaching. But I'm mainly on LinkedIn and Instagram these days. And of course, my email is everywhere on all of those things. So if anybody has any questions or wants to reach out, I would be happy to talk to people. I do offer free voice your value calls. That's just a half hour call for anybody, any women who are interested in exploring how to give up the like idea that they're bragging.
Yeah.
And really own their worth, which is really important when you're doing interviews, when you're going for a promotion. And I think a lot of us can get in our head a lot of time about downplaying what amazing skills we are, to bring it back to what we were talking about at the beginning. Yeah. And so what my mission is to really help women lean into what their superpowers are and really learn how to communicate them and feel confident about it.
Thank you. That's so important. Thank you so much for sharing that. Julie, thank you so much for being here today. It was
such
a pleasure having you. It was a delight. Thank you.
Thank you. This was wonderful. And that's a wrap on this episode of Her Leading Story. If you love this episode, please help me reach more women by leaving a review wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll see you next week.
This has been an Awkward Sage production.